You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel.
Episode number 11 of Real Talk.
Yeah, 11.
It is currently February 29th, 2024. We're sneaking up on Oscar season.
We are.
Manny, happy leap day.
Yeah, happy leap day,
I
right?
guess. Yeah. Is that something that means anything to you?
No.
Does that affect your life in any way?
I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. I think I might have cared about it when I was a child, but now I'm a cold, cynical, bitter adult.
Yes.
And it's just another day going to my job and then coming here
yes.
for some actual fun.
Indeed.
And then tomorrow will be the first.
Yeah.
And I'll be back at my job.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Yeah. Leap day means jack shit to me.
Yeah.
I had to, I got into an argument with my daughter over if people are born on leap day, they still age a year even when there isn't a February 29th.
That would be bizarre if that wasn't the case. We could just rename all the months every 4 years. We could just go just new months.
Yeah.
Invent new ones.
Yeah.
Invent new days. So that people don't have repeat birthdays.
Yeah. She's like, it's not their birthday. So how are they? And I'm like, that's not how it works. That's not how it works.
How old is your daughter again?
She's 10. She's 10.
And the only reason I ask that is because I just find it very funny that you phrased it like, I got into an argument with my daughter, who is 10.
My daughter and I get into arguments because she is too much like her mother and her father.
Oh, yeah.
In that when they think they're right, they're right.
Yeah, you've never dug in your heels on anything on this podcast.
No.
You've never got your back up against the wall on anything.
No. I wish I could. I can honestly say this. I'm trying to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Have I gotten better? No.
But, but you're trying.
But I'm trying.
But you're trying.
I make an honest effort to try not to. It's just very difficult for me.
You know what? This reminds me a lot. This is kind of a non sequitur, but it's just where my brain's going, so I'm going to go
okay.
with it. I've only seen the movie Manchester by the Sea once. I really enjoyed it.
Yes.
But I remember feeling like that about that movie, where Casey Affleck's character, I guess mild spoilers for Manchester by the Sea.
Do you want to go back?
Thematic spoiler. I came away from that movie feeling like he was not better after what happened. He had not begun to get better. And life probably would not get better for him. But he was trying.
Yes.
And that was kind of the point.
That
he learned to try.
I am trying.
Yeah.
I can say that. Yeah. But I will be honest, while I am trying to get better, I don't feel that I've gotten much better.
But you know what? Even the trying is setting a good example, I think.
Is
so.
It?
Yeah.
Is it?
All right. Maybe. I don't fucking know.
Whatever. What knows? We do know is that we have to thank Duncan.
I do know that.
Yes.
I have that written in my notes.
Thank you,
Duncan.
For coming in last week to join us for Real Talk and our review of The Fifth Element.
Did a movie he had not seen.
That was shocked me.
I respect that deeply.
Yes.
That he just decided, you know what, this is a movie I've heard lots about. I want to come see it. I want to come talk about it with Sam and Manny. And we had a lot of fun with him on here.
We did. It was a good time. I was very excited for the rewatch of that film and then was utterly disappointed after doing so. I shouldn't say utterly disappointed. It's just that movie was, I held it in much higher regard. And on this viewing, it dropped.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I was expecting that one to be one where you maybe dug in your heels a little bit. I'm not sure. It wound up being a pretty, I thought it was a good conversation. I came away from it definitely disappointed.
Yeah.
It's not even the kind of movie that well, I mean, I won't get too deep into that because maybe somebody might want to go back and re-listen and hear our thoughts. But
yep.
Suffice it to say, having Duncan in here for two episodes was delightful as always, and he's
yes.
welcome back.
Yeah, can't wait to have him back. I'm excited to see what we're going to try and pick something good for him, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. There was at least one. I've been trying to rack my brain what the hell it was. I'm sure people who listened to the episode know it. But there's at least one movie that we said we would love to have him on for.
Oh, but it wasn't thematic with our...
I don't think it was like a 97 or anything.
Miniseries, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't a 97 or a 98.
I don't think so.
Whatever. But speaking of movies that Duncan should watch next, that is our weekly question. Mm. Is what movie should Duncan watch next? Posted on our Spotify. Hmm. As always, one of our PFGs was happy to offer their suggestion. And I'm afraid I think I actually have to disagree with the answer. It was from Little Baby Wesley.
A nickname that I'm sure he relishes.
Yes. Which we were not, or which we forgot to call it to his face.
Yeah. No, we brought it up when we saw it later. I think. Yeah. Or maybe I think the audio clip that we played for him.
Yes.
Called him that.
Yes.
But, yeah.
But he suggested Citizen Kane.
No, that's not a good...
I agree.
It's not a good primer.
I don't think, and this is, I don't, and as I was about to say this, I'm like, this sounds really bad for Duncan. Duncan's not at the point yet where Citizen Kane is a movie that I think he would fully enjoy.
Honestly, man, I don't even think I'm at the point yet. You know, like Citizen Kane, I have seen, I think, twice, and it can be dry.
Yes.
It's so famous for being so groundbreaking. If you watch a movie from before Citizen Kane and after Citizen Kane, film changed when that movie came out, and it was first and it was best. There are movies I find infinitely more interesting.
100%. But yeah,
but it's still good. It's still like on an enjoyment scale, it's still a 4 for me. Still very good.
I just don't think Duncan's at a place where that's something that he should watch at the moment. We need to expand his horizons a little bit more.
Yeah.
Before that,
was it L.A. Confidential? Was that the one we were talking about doing with Duncan? Maybe
no, because he's seen it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyways, what is your suggestion?
Honestly, the first one that came to mind is The Town.
Ooh.
That was a great reaction.
That's a good fucking answer. Yeah.
The Town was the first one that came to mind. A movie that is in our esteem, like you and I have talked endlessly about The Town and how good it is, how good of a bank robbery movie it is. I don't necessarily think it's like the deepest movie ever made or anything.
Yep.
It's just a very solid heist movie.
Yeah.
And I think it would be a great one. I think I would enjoy it deeply.
I think you would as well.
The theatrical version.
I have 6 suggestions.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I kind of went off.
All right.
So I know the first one that went by my mind was kind of going along with, like, he's off. Like, again, I'm not saying this to denigrate the boy, but he is very into like action films and blockbusters.
Yeah.
Basically.
Fair enough.
And he's starting to, like, him watching Mystic River was awesome.
And really enjoying it.
And watching LA Confidential and enjoying it. So it's great. So the first one I thought of, let's go with something. He'd watched Heat. He didn't talk about it.
Oh, okay.
But he has seen Heat. He kind of stopped halfway through. I think he started a little late, didn't realize the length, and then went back to it. I haven't gotten his full thoughts on it. So I my first suggestion was Crimson Tide.
Great pick.
Okay. Next one, I said, I'm like, okay, let's pick it up a little. Let's go with something with a little bit more depth. Sicario.
Mm-hmm.
Then I decided, well, if we're going to do Sicario, let's do Prisoners.
Yeah.
Let's get some deep.
I think Prisoners is a little bit slower than the rest of your suggestions so far.
I agree.
So it's a little bit riskier for that reason, but I really like that movie.
So I pushed it a little bit. Then I went with, well, let's go with a really fucking great film that's so incredibly entertaining because the dialogue and the acting is so good. A Few Good Men.
Yes. Very good.
Then I went with, well, he seemed to be into sci-fi. I know he likes the Transformer films. He was middling on The Fifth Element. So I'm with Looper.
Yes, another great pick.
And then I decided to go with a film that, despite our love for it, it received no
Oscar nominations.
Oscar nominations. And Wind River was my last pick.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Of those, I don't know why, Sicario kind of sticks out to me as one that I think you would enjoy.
Sicario or A Few Good Men are the ones that kind of stood out for me.
Yeah.
I agree. All right. So, Duncan, if you're listening, which you're probably not, those are our suggestions.
With that being said, I still think The Town is is probably the best
one. I think that is a great pick. Yeah. The next weekly question I have is, what movie soundtracks did you buy on cassette, CD, or vinyl growing up. And once again, as I put this on our social media, I got plenty of answers. So I'm going to read a bunch to you. And then on social media, some of the PFG's answers as well.
That's great.
All right. So some of the ones we got, The Sound of Music, Clueless, Forrest Gump, The Bodyguard, Empire Records, Pulp Fiction, very popular answer, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Footloose, Dirty Dancing, Dangerous Minds, Top Gun, Natural Born Killers, Days of Thunder, Titanic, Pretty Woman, Juice, and that's from the general public. Mm. The PFGs, we have Mushy, who answered, of course, with The Lion King.
Naturally.
T-Bone answered with Cocktail, Dumb and Dumber, and Judgment Night. Now, Cocktail's soundtrack is great.
The soundtrack to Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah, soundtrack to Dumb and Dumber.
I can't even think of what's on there.
There's a song by the Crash Test Dummies, I think, that he really likes on there.
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rachel answered with Dirty Dancing,
hmm.
Stand By Me, great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, Dazed and Confused.
Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump, both very good answers.
Yeah, yeah. Sam,
hmm.
What are some of the soundtracks you purchased as a young whippersnapper?
You know what's so funny is I do to this day have a CD collection.
Nice.
I do still have CDs and I do still collect physical media. As a matter of fact, one of my friends who's a musician makes tapes.
Fuck off.
Yeah, he does still make cassettes with his music on, and I purchased one from him the other day, and Emma and I listened to it, and it was delightful. I love that. With that being said, movie soundtracks, for whatever reason, I never really purchased a lot of.
Interesting.
I think the only two, to my knowledge, in my collection currently
mm-hmm.
are Juno.
Whoa.
Which is like very indie acoustic sort of vibe.
Okay.
And I think La La Land as well. I think those are the only ones.
Interesting.
And I think part of that just comes from that most of my existence, music has been readily available in individual songs. So having something like a Forrest Gump soundtrack, where you have All Along the Watchtower alongside Gimme Shelter, you know, I can just, my entire life, even before Spotify, I could just go listen to those two songs right next to each other.
That makes sense. Yeah. This is all pre-Spotify, pre-internet.
Yeah. Like when I was growing up, when I was first kind of starting to get into music, I was already, it wasn't Napster, but I was definitely pirating, or at least my family was pirating music. My dad worked in radio, so he was burning CDs all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, I never really purchased a lot of film soundtracks, honestly. When I bought and listened to albums, they were like top to bottom. They were an artist's album.
Gotcha.
Basically.
Yep. So I have three. The obvious one is Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like obviously. The next one, Cocktail. 100%. Fucking listen to that all the time. Great soundtrack. And the last one is Good Morning Vietnam.
Oh, cool. I have actually seen that movie. Similar kind of style soundtrack to other Vietnam movies.
It has all the standard ones. But the other reason I like Good Morning Vietnam is the soundtrack to Good Morning Vietnam had clips from the movie in it.
Oh, nice.
Of Robin Williams doing Adrian Cronauer.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I know. It was a while ago in the chat group, but I don't know if you remember it, but I did the Adrian Cronauer. Like, I can do the Good Morning Vietnam monologue.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. I think maybe I've seen you do that.
Yeah, I put an audio clip in the chat group once.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can't remember how it came up, so I recorded myself doing it and then put it in there.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, great answers. Thank you, everyone, once again for answering them. As per tradition, I think it's every other week this happens, Letterboxd does what they call their Letterboxd Showdown. This week was they labeled it Cutter's Way, the best Oscar-nominated film editing. A good editor is like a pianist, someone with a sixth sense, working at speed on big shorts and operating out of sight. Editing is all about assembling the matrix of options between takes to compose the conversation with the skill of Amadeus. This takes up all the hours, turning in the longest days, especially when the timeline decides to crash and send us down a fury road like a raging bull. But upon deliverance, we're transported to Chinatown or Casablanca, even the City of God. It just takes the right stuff, plus a few good men and women. We see you, Anne V. Coates. For this showdown, round up your top 10 films nominated for the Ultimate Place in the Sun, the Academy Award for Best Editing. Just don't forget to save your work. And Private Ryan.
First of all, love the writing of that.
Yes. Yes. So I'm going to count down the top 20 films that that I guess were nominated by Letterboxd users.
Yeah. Not so ranked by their editing prowess, but by their overall merit or enjoyment if they were nominated for Best Editing.
Yeah. The way that these are ranked is these are the ones that were the most mentioned.
I see.
So it doesn't necessarily mean the best. It means these were the most popular ones. Mm. So number 20 is City of God.
Which I haven't seen, but was that a Manny Movie Club pick?
No, it was a high recommendation from Wes that I watched, and he was overjoyed that I finally did.
I've heard nothing but spectacular
it's
things.
It's fucking amazing. It's as good as you hear.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for that year because we will be reviewing it.
What year is that, 2000?
No, it's a little bit later. I want to say 2005.
City of God. 2005 is your guess?
No, it's good. 2002.
Nice, 2002.
Oh, I cheated, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not that far away. Number 19, Apocalypse Now.
Never seen.
I'm very excited to rewatch it, and I'm going to have to rewatch it before January, because a podcast I listen to is doing a Francis Ford Coppola retrospective. They're spending all of January next month doing Coppola. So I'm hoping to get those
out. His name often pops up in lists of directors who have the greatest gap between their best work and their worst work.
Yeah, The Godfather and Jack.
Yeah, yes. And those are the two names that come up.
Yes. Jack is bad.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Next up is All That Jazz.
Nope.
I have seen it. I found it pretty boring, to be honest. Oh, wait, no. I might be thinking of something else. Let me just quickly double check. I was wrong. My apology. I'm thinking of a different film. I have not seen All That Jazz. I really want to. So I haven't seen that one, which is the only film on this list I haven't seen. The next one is the one that when I think of editing, or not like the greatest editing, but what editing is, putting together things that shouldn't work together and do. And that's JFK. Hmm. The editing of the black and white, the real footage, the Zapruder footage, the color film, everything. I think the editing JFK is absolutely superb. It's one of my favorite edited films when I think of it.
Yeah, we were heaping praise. You and I were both heaping praise on that.
Next up is the Memento.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Great pick. Honestly, editing in a number of Nolan's films
could
be on here, but Memento is a tippy top one.
Yeah, the other one for editing that I would have from Nolan isn't on the list. Heads up for you. I'll spoiler. I thought Inception would be another one.
Yeah, Inception. I really like the editing in Dunkirk as well.
Fair.
Yeah.
Spoiler, not on the list. Next up, The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I agree with that one. And then this is the one that you said.
This low?
Yeah, this would be 14, The Godfather.
Yeah, that's the movie I think of when I think of editing.
Yeah.
This is The Godfather for sure.
Godfather Part 2, because you're weaving those two different timelines together.
But I mean, I know this is only one scene, but the fucking, the baptism scene, the editing in that is just...
Yeah. Whew. Well, apparently it's 14.
14th best.
At 13, Star Wars, A New Hope.
Okay.
I if you think about it, think about the scene where Han and Luke are having the dogfight with...
Yes, that's a great scene.
Yeah, that's really, really good. Really good. At number 12, The Social Network.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I love it. Number 11, sad to see it this low, Pulp Fiction.
Yep, makes sense.
Number 10, sad to see it this low and behind a couple films, Jaws.
Yeah, it's incredible. Incredible bit of editing.
Number 9, I really hope I can try to rewatch this because my opinion of this movie has just kind of dropped and dropped. And that's Oppenheimer at 9.
Yeah, we will. We'll probably talk about that. I really want to revisit this, actually. I'm going to try to get to it again before the Oscars, I think. Is it available anywhere right now?
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
Yeah, for like a premium rental, I would imagine.
No, it's on Amazon.
Oh, yeah. I might try to get to this before the Oscars again because... I mean, spoilers, I guess. I don't know if we're doing like a revised top 10 or anything like on the air, but...
you and I might... We haven't fully discussed it.
Minor spoiler, maybe. It's down a few spots.
Yeah.
On mine.
It didn't make mine.
Wow.
It didn't make my top 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where was it on your original list?
12-ish.
Yeah.
It's probably dropped by now because I've watched a couple of movies that I think are better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number 8 is Citizen Kane.
Hmm. The aforementioned.
Yeah. Should be higher.
Probably.
Especially when you start getting near the top. The top, I won't lie, the top three kind of bug me.
These are ranked by Letterboxd users, so yes. not a surprise.
I know. Number 7 is Raging Bull.
Never seen it.
I think you'd like it. I've only seen it once.
Scorsese, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Number 6, one of my all-time top 20s, Lawrence of Arabia, which has one of my favorite cuts of all time.
Yeah, it's the famous famous cut of him blowing up the match.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I've never seen the movie, but I know that. I know that cut.
Number 5 is Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, I think this is one of the best editing ever. It's Goodfellas.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The Henry's Very Bad Day.
Yes. And then 3, 2, and 1 here, I won't lie, bother me. Hmm. Even though I like this film a lot, number 3 is Parasite.
I need to revisit Parasite, admittedly. So I think I've seen it 3 times, but not for a minute now. It would not have been the first one to come to mind for me.
Not,
spectacular film as it is, the editing doesn't jump out at me.
Yeah. Number 2 is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
To be fair, I guess these are insanely popular films.
Yes.
And again, it's not necessarily ranking them by their editing.
No.
It is the films that people like.
That made the most lists.
Yeah. That yes. Made, yeah.
So number 1 is Whiplash.
Which is a movie I love.
Yes. I just can't remember the editing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm just overpowered by the two performances so much.
Yeah.
But I love, like, don't get me wrong, I love Whiplash. I think the... I think it's like Parasite being on the kind of that high kind of, it's gnawing at me for some reason.
Yeah, but it's an insanely popular movie, and they're not necessarily, from what I'm gathering of that description, they're not being ranked by these had the best editing.
No.
These are the films the Academy thinks have the best editing. Rank them by how much you like them, the movies.
Apparently.
I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's it.
Yeah. Great movies on the Fun. List.
What's the next one?
There's another one coming up.
Yeah, they do one every time.
Yeah.
Oh.
Every 2 weeks?
Yeah. Let's go here. And the next one is... Oh, shit. Best Oscar-nominated directing.
Oh. Cool. So any movie that's been nominated for Best Director
is eligible. Yes.
It's going to be a lot of similar names.
Uh-huh.
A lot of similar names.
Huh. I bet you
Whiplash won't be on there.
I bet you I'm not going to be a fan of what finishes at number 1.
Hmm.
Something tells me I'm going to be angry.
It's probably going to be like Parasite and Everything Everywhere All at Once again.
That's fucking fucking disgusting to me. Disgusting to me. Okay. Let's get into what we've been watching.
Mm-hmm.
Sam. If memory serves, you've watched some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I watched some pretty good stuff. I'm kind of kind of on the other end.
Oh, sweet.
I wanted to watch I've been making my way through Brooklyn Nine-Nine once again, and one of the things that I've discovered in watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so I began rewatching it because of Andre Brower's passing.
Yep.
And I've been really enjoying going back and loving a lot of his performances and a lot of his comedic moments. But one of the things that's really stood out to me on this rewatch, other than Andre Brower's comedic prowess, is Andy Samberg, and I'm really beginning to realize that I like Andy Samberg as a comic and as a comedic actor. I like him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I like him in bit parts that he's in other movies, like I Love You, Man. And for that reason, I decided to check out his 2016 comedy, Pop Star: Never Stop, Never Stopping. First of all, A grade title, as far as I'm concerned. I love that title. Pop Star: Never Stop, Never Stopping. When it becomes clear that a solo album is a failure, a former boy band member does everything in his power to maintain his celebrity status. This got a lot of points from me for being Andy Samberg, for having him in a lead role. So it's all the members of Lonely Island, basically. Got a lot of points for being Andy Samberg. And it got a lot of points because it clearly draws very heavily from Spinal Tap. This is basically this is Spinal Tap if it was about Justin Timberlake instead. That's basically what it is. Imagine Justin Timberlake leaves NSYNC and decides
he
to
would
make,
never.
He would never. But imagine, let's live in the world for a second. He leaves NSYNC and decides to make a documentary about releasing his first solo album, and it flops. That's basically the plot of this movie. It's mockumentary format. Really funny for the most part. Some predictability, some beats that are very predictable, but overall it's carried by the comedic prowess of Andy Samberg and the way that he plays this arrogant character very, very well, very much suiting his comedic style. While there's a couple comedic scenes that stand out to me, there was one cut to him in disguise going undercover kind of in everyday life. He just wants to fly under the radar at this club, and the cut to him in his disguise fucking killed me. it was fantastic. So that was the hardest laugh in the movie for me. The rest of it is fine. If you're a fan of Andy Samberg, it's worth checking out. I did give it a 4 because I had a really good time.
Sweet.
I had a really good time with it. I don't really know if it's really a 4. None of these people are particularly great actors, so mm-hmm. when it has some of the more serious payoffs, when we have some of the more serious beats between these friends reconciling or some of the more dramatic moments of them having fights, you don't really feel it the ways that you should, but the comedy is actually quite good in my opinion. So I still gave it a 4. I'll probably check it out again and would recommend it for anyone looking for a quick music-related hour and a half long comedy if you're a fan of Andy Samberg.
Okay. Sure.
You have anything to add about this?
I've seen it.
And?
I remember enjoying it more than I thought I would.
For sure.
The thing is that all cards on the table, I was watching this while also trying to get laid.
Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't really watching too much, but I remember watching more than I should have when a lady was macking on me.
That's a good sign. Yeah. I mean, for the movie, not for the lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't last with her anyway. So yeah, not a big deal. But I do remember that. I remember she's like, let's put this on. I was like, in my mind, I was like, perfect, because I'm not going to fucking watch this anyways. And then I was like, this is actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it is funny. It's really
so
funny.
She'd be like kind of trying to put the movies up like, we could just keep laughing.
So the reason I wanted to start with Popstar Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Oh, that's right.
Is because, honestly, the entire time I was watching it, not only was I thinking, this is borrowing pretty heavily from This Is Spinal Tap, I also was thinking, man, this is good, but I just wish I was watching Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story instead. Yeah. A film that I've watched many times, so I realized on Letterboxd I don't get around to a lot of rewatches these days. Most of my watches are first time watches. That being said, Walk Hard I've seen many, many times, just never logged it before. Mm-hmm. So I did watch Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story the following night from 2007. Singer Dewey Cox overcomes adversity to become a musical legend. You'll have to remind me whether you've seen this, Manny.
I own it. I have seen it.
Oh, you have seen it. Okay, yeah. Great. This has come close to being a Manny Movie Club pick a couple times for me. This is a comedy that only grows in estimation every time that I watch it. I think part of the reason for that, the reasons for it are twofold, I guess threefold. One, it's just a very funny movie, and I understand it and appreciate it more and more every time that I watch it. Two is that I'm becoming more and more involved with music, so a lot of the music cliches and music people that it pokes fun at are poked fun at very well, and I feel like I've met a lot of these people in my everyday life. As I go along.
I love it.
And three, obviously, for anybody listening to this podcast, I've been watching a lot more movies. I watch more and more movies each and every day, each and every year. And with that, I watch more and more music biopics. And I realize, unfortunately, what a drawn-out genre it can kind of be. There's not a lot of fresh ground to tread on there. This movie makes fun of a lot of the tropes that are present in, that were already present in music biopics in 2007 in a somewhat loving way. It very heavily makes fun of, I almost said Walk Hard. It makes fun of Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash movie, which I actually never did see.
It's really good.
Yeah, so I've heard. Walk the Line and, of course, Ray, which I did see for the podcast, actually. It makes fun of mainly those two movies, but music biopics in general. Part of the reason that I haven't seen Walk the Line is because I love this movie so much. And I'm just like, I'm sure Walk the Line is as good as everybody says it is, but I don't think I'd be able to take it seriously. I've seen the scene where he records Folsom Prison Blues in the studio when they just busted out and the band has to keep up with them. And that scene is parodied in Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story to perfection. I posted on my Letterboxd review, Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story is unironically one of the best music biopics I've ever seen. And it really is. Not only is it gut-bustingly funny, not only does it lampoon the music industry and the music biopic to perfection, the music is genuinely good. The song Let's Duet between John C. Reilly and Jenna Fischer is insanely funny. And the closing track, A Beautiful Ride, is heartwarming. It actually ends the movie, it wraps the movie up very, very nicely, and I've always really liked that song. It's a star-studded cast. I mean, star-studded might be a little strong, but it's full of these sort of B-listers that don't get a ton of love, but when they do show up in movies, I always really like them. Obviously, John C. Reilly is the lead. We have Tim Meadows, who is the... I guess he's the principal in Mean Girls, is probably where a lot of people would know him from. He is probably the funniest minor character in this movie as one of the band members. You have Jenna Fischer, best known as Pam on The Office, is insanely funny. Kristen Wiig, Chris Parnell, who is voices Jerry on Rick and Morty. And, of course, I would be remiss to not mention esteemed character actress and fugitive from the law, Margot Martindale, in a small part as Dewey's mom. She's fantastic. I just wanted to read you this Letterboxd review that I love so much on this movie.
Are you going to shout out the writer as well?
I meant to, and I totally didn't write down the name, so I apologize. Okay. This wasn't me. This is somebody. It's one of the top reviews on Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. If you wanted to find the name, I'm sure it wouldn't be hard. Walk Hard walked so Bohemian Rhapsody could suck.
Holy shit. That fucking rules. Yeah. I was really hoping Bohemian Rhapsody would show up on that editing list.
Yeah. So you could shit on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Many of the reviews for Walk Hard in the Letterboxd section are to the effect of, I can't believe this movie exists, and then somebody still went out and made Bohemian Rhapsody, because it's making fun of exactly what that movie would turn out to be. I have written down that this is a guilty pleasure for me. I feel no guilt about this whatsoever,
There's no guilt. This is a legitimately
great comedy. As a major Homer pick, it does get a 5 from me.
Wicked.
Because I enjoy it that fucking much. I don't think everybody will get that level of enjoyment out of it. But if anything that I talked about sounds interesting to you, whether it's the performance of John C. Reilly, whether it's the lampooning of the music industry or the music biopic, or if you like any of the comedic performances or any of the comedic actors who I listed off, I highly recommend checking out Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. It's one that I constantly come back to, or at least I did before I was only watching movies once and forgetting about them on my Letterboxd. So that's Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. Do you have anything you want to add before I proceed?
I've seen it once. Yeah. I remember thinking it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I it's one that I need to revisit, but I'm not really itching to. John C. Reilly's comedic acting isn't quite my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I think if I watched it, I'm probably not going to like it too much. So I'm going to put it off for a little bit.
The last thing I'll say on it before I get off of this is, you know, when you're watching a movie and a young performer shows up, you're watching a movie maybe from, I don't know, 15 to 20 years ago, and a young performer shows up and you're like, hey, I know you, but older.
Yes.
Jared from Booksmart.
Fuck off.
Yeah, as a like,
fuck
very,
off.
Like, very young.
He'd be like a child.
I had to pause and rewind. I was like, that's fucking Jared. I had to like literally go back and point it out. He's blink and you miss it role. There's a moment towards the end of the movie where Dewey is playing catch with all of his kids. And the first kid that he plays catch with is Jared.
Oh, makes me want to watch the movie just for that.
Yeah, it's great.
Phenomenal.
So that's Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. Okay. Right. Trying my best to find the ideal spot for this microphone in this new setup. This is probably getting in your way. Yeah, a little bit. That's okay. Shuffle that around. Okay. Maybe I should have put this one a little bit earlier just because I don't know if I have a ton to say about it, but we'll go here. All of Us Strangers.
Oh, haven't seen it.
A screenwriter drawn back to his childhood home enters into a fledgling relationship with his downstairs neighbor while discovering a mysterious new way to heal from losing his parents 30 years ago. I'll say this about All of Us Strangers. I won't get too deep into it. But suffice it to say, this is carried by the two excellent performances, which garnered no love from the Oscars.
Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal?
Yes, Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal. I know Andrew Scott from Fleabag, which I don't think you've seen, right?
Nope.
He's really good in Fleabag, and he's really good in this as well. And then Paul Mescal, obviously, from... I know him from After Sun. That's my entire...
Which the world will know him soon from Gladiator 2.
Oh, yeah, true. Very true. So yeah, All of Us Strangers, I can't really get too deep into what the plot is, but what I did write in my Letterboxd review was that this is a film that's not too concerned about plot. And I don't say that to denigrate it. It feels like a conscious decision that the film is like, what's going on is not really important. What's important is how the film feels, how the film looks, the look of the world that they're in, the emotion behind it. And they're not concerning themselves too much with what's happening, per se. It feels like a conscious decision. So stylistically, I can see how this would rub some people the wrong way. Personally, I really liked the vibe that it struck. I thought that it did really well. I can't really get too far into this movie without spoiling what is the plot of the movie.
Yep.
But suffice it to say, it got a 4 because the craft of it is that good. And honestly, Andrew Scott's performance, he does this thing in a couple different scenes where he's trying not to cry. Mm-hmm. And I can totally see how that ruins some people. Jordan, he does this thing where he's trying not to cry, but the tears come out anyway. Really hard to do as an actor. Mm-hmm. And he does it awesome. And he's very convincing and very, very good. So yeah, this gets a 4 from me. If that's all I can say.
Okay.
What else do I got? Okay. I got one more. I was excited to see this. It had been on my watch list for a long time, obviously. I got the fateful notification from Letterboxd. Thank you, Letterboxd, for notifying me of this on my phone, that Poor Things was available for purchase on one of my favorite platforms. I knew I was going to watch this before the Oscars anyway, so I shelled out the $25 to simply just buy it. I wasn't going to wait to see if it was going to show up on a rental. I wasn't going to do anything like that. I didn't even want to pirate it. I was like, I'm going to pay money to watch this movie, and I'll own it forever, and that's fine. I have seen all of Yorgos Lanthimos's American releases, or what I think are American releases, because I'm fairly certain he has a number of movies that are in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen The Lobster, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, The Favorite, and now Poor Things. The incredible tale about the fantastical evolution of Bella Baxter, a young woman brought back to life by the brilliant and unorthodox scientist Dr. Godwin Baxter. I at least liked all of his other films that I saw. In the case of The Lobster, I really liked it.
Is that a 4?
Lobster's a 4. Favorite's a 4. Killing of a Sacred Deer is a 3.
Okay.
You never saw Killing of a Sacred Deer, right?
No.
Yeah, it's of all of the movies that I've seen, it's probably the one that you would be least inclined to enjoy.
I will like it less than The Lobster. You'll like it
less than The Lobster.
Holy shit.
I think so, anyway. I don't know.
I was actually going to try and watch it. Now I'm fucking really hesitant.
I could be wrong. I've been wrong about a lot before.
Not when it comes to me.
I was wrong about Sorry to Bother You.
That's one. One.
One been, in like
that's
two,
one you've like been close wrong. Of
300 episodes.
Yeah, it's pretty rare that I've either liked or disliked a movie, like either given something a 5 or a 2 that's been shocking to you.
Yeah. This I thought was a spectacularly made movie from Yorgos Lanthimos. It's probably my favorite of his so far. I thought it was spectacular. The craft in this movie, the care that is put into the sets and the costuming is amazing. I love the kind of model look of all of the different cities and towns that we visit.
Mm-hmm.
Everything kind of has this look of like a dollhouse that I really enjoy.
The set design and the production design of it reminded me of a Wes Anderson film.
Yeah. Wes Anderson maybe combined with like Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
But like better, like a better version of what both those filmmakers are trying to achieve, I thought. And all of the costuming, especially with Emma Stone, is fantastic. I love everything that everybody is wearing in this, or not wearing in certain
scenes.
Thank you.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, there it is. Speaking of Emma Stone, absolutely ballsy performance.
Yes.
All I had heard about this film is that she is one of the reasons to watch it. It's considered now a two-horse race in the Best Actress category between her and Lily Gladstone.
I'm fine with either one winning.
I am also fine with either one. And it's also tough to compare them now that I've seen this performance. They are as dissimilar as two performances can get.
It's like comparing, not the same, no, we're not talking quality-wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's like comparing, it's like comparing Nicolas Cage in Face Off and Tom Wilkinson in The Bedroom.
Totally. That's exactly what it is. It's just two performances that could not be more different from each other. They're both doing the same art form. They're both acting, but they are showcasing the depth of that art form.
Mm-hmm.
Because Emma Stone in this is going as balls to the wall as you possibly can. Every risky, crazy decision that could have backfired in her face, she made it.
Yeah.
Everything about the opening 20 minutes or so of this performance, where she's in her, let's say, initial state.
I wanted to kill myself.
Did you? You didn't like that?
Nope.
Yeah.
No, I would say the first 10 minutes I looked over at Rachel, I'm like, this is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was worried.
Yeah. Very. I had, I won't say I had reservations about it, but, definitely the film gets better as it goes along. I'll agree with you on that much.
100%.
I wasn't disliking it in that stage.
I honestly felt, sorry to keep cutting you off.
No, go ahead.
Truly felt, I'm like, I'm watching a student film. That's what it felt like to
me.
Wow. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yes. The first 10 minutes, I was like, this is utter dog shit. Dog shit. I'm watching a student film and someone who's never acted before.
Wow.
I remember watching, I'm like, this better fucking improve, because if that's what she's doing for this whole movie, that's not an Oscar nom for me.
And it did.
Oh, yeah.
It fucking improved.
It's unreal.
Yeah. She showcases a great amount of range and, like I said, a great amount of, I think, courage to make some of the decisions that she made in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, you contrast that to Lily Gladstone, who just has this quiet regality. This
great description.
This command that she has over every scene just by being, it's her presence that that commands every scene. There's very few line deliveries I can remember about Lily Gladstone's in Killer of the Flower Moon, but it's just her presence and the way that she commands every room that she's in that really elevates her. The complete opposite from Emma Stone, who is yelling, biting, fucking, pissing, just doing everything she can, like just doing the most that she possibly can. So I had a lot of fun watching her from like a technical perspective and other perspectives. Sorry.
Love you so much.
Easy
right
joke.
Now.
I thought that Mark Ruffalo was so against type and so good. He's having so much fun in the movie. I liked him a lot, as well as Willem Dafoe, who is very good at being creepy. Very, very good at being creepy.
I am so sad that Mark Ruffalo will not win because of Robert Downey Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of Robert Downey Jr. getting an Oscar. He's an incredible actor. I wish he had gotten nominated for Avengers Endgame. But his performance in Oppenheimer is pretty good. But it's good enough, and he's so beloved that he's got the Oscar wrapped up. And it's a fucking travesty. A travesty when a performance like this from Mark Ruffalo loses out. I am honestly and truly sad that he will not win, because this performance is mind-blowingly good.
He does such a good job of portraying this man who is so confident and has all this bravado. He portrays himself as a ladies' man, and he has this mustache-twirling, globe-trotting quality to him where he fancies himself kind of a James Bond. But we also see the other side of him, especially later in the movie. Not only the evil, but the sad. Just the fucking pathetic.
Yes.
Also completely unafraid in his performance to go to these really low, pathetic places where he's weeping and he's begging and he's groveling. I loved his performance, especially, I think.
As good as Emma Stone is in this movie, and it's a fucking monumental, monumental performance. Mark Ruffalo is my favorite part of the movie. Like, running away.
Yeah.
Running away. He fucking killed me in this movie.
I thought Poor Things was a movie with a lot to say. I think I'll need to rewatch it to fully digest what those things are. But off the top of my head, it strikes me about a strikes me as a movie about a world that doesn't know how to process a woman who is so naive and so innocent. And it's about the people who want to put that innocence in a box and lock it up, and how that very act is the thing that kills it. It's about the people who see this woman and goes, I want her to belong to me because of how she is. But even just putting her in a cage is enough to kill that spirit, I think. So that's what I took away from Poor Things. I didn't rate it on Letterboxd. It's on the cusp. If there was ever a movie to give a half to, it would be this one. I think for now it sits at a 4.
Interesting.
But I'm not totally sure. I haven't stopped thinking about this movie since I watched it. It's a very interesting one, and there's a lot to enjoy. I think for now it's a 4, but I honestly don't know. The more I think about it, it could turn into a 5.
I think it'll turn into a 5 for you.
I think it probably will.
I think it will. I'm pretty sure I gave it a 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I must have, because there's no way it's a 3, and I'm not giving it a fucking 5.
No. Yeah. So that's it. That's what I've been watching.
All right. So I've been watching a bit as well. Not as much as I normally have. I'm a very busy boy. I'm going to lump these two together. Like I said, I'm going to cheat, but I'm not really going to talk about them that very much. I'll just quickly go over them. A podcast I listen to is Blank Check, which goes through a director's filmography. I found myself having, despite the fact that I want to rewatch some 2023s before the Oscars, we're right in the middle of our 97, so I'm trying to punch out 97s. Every once in a while, I want to watch something else and I'm unsure. So using the Blank Check podcast, they just finished David Fincher, and doing the watch along with them, rewatching David Fincher was a fucking joy, obviously. And I should actually maybe do a little write up summary for the movie group, just showing my rankings of the Fincher films. Sure. The one they did after was only a 3 film filmography, and I thought about doing it, but their first film wasn't readily available, so I didn't really want. And that they did Barbara Streisand, which we've seen, The Prince of Tides.
I mean, it's the only Streisand I've seen.
Same here.
She only has like 4 or 5 films,
3.
Right?
Yeah. Yentl, The Mirror Has Two Faces, and
Prince of Tides.
The Prince of Tides. So I thought about doing it, didn't. But I knew what they were doing next because I have the two hosts on Letterboxd, so I see what they're watching. And they record well in advance, like months in advance to when stuff is released. And so I knew a director that I love was coming up, and that's John McTiernan. So I watched his first film, Nomads, which was utter fucking garbage. And his second film was one that I watched this week, and his third film. And so his second film ever is Predator. A team of commandos on a mission in Central American jungle find themselves hunted by an extraterrestrial warrior. His third film he ever made was Die Hard.
That's fucking crazy.
Which, for those, a New York City police officer tries to save his estranged wife and several others taken hostage by terrorists during a Christmas party. During a Christmas party at Nakatomi Plaza in Los Angeles. Both these movies are 5s.
Predator's a 5.
Oh, Predator's an easy 5. Wow. Easy 5. I think what really led me to believe that, or not led me to believe, what really led me to want to kind of be a little bit more committed to following along with the Blank Check with these filmographies, when as a director I at least have a pretty good interest in, and I might go back and revisit some of the ones they've done some really great fucking directors. When I watched Nomads and saw how fucking horrible it was, for him to go to Predator is unbelievable. And so there are a few films in his filmography that I haven't seen, and I've heard they're not good. So I'm very interested in watching them. But Predator, watching it again, was just a fucking delight. Like, that movie is so well put together, and the action in it is unreal, and the special effects for 87 is just chef's kiss. Like, this is pre-CGI. Like, pre-CGI. And they still have an invisible fucking alien warrior. And the special effects, the makeup for the Predator suit itself was unreal. I absolutely love this movie. I had a great time. And then I don't need to speak any more on Die Hard than I have 1,000 times. The movie's fucking perfect. It's spectacular. Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber is, in my opinion, the greatest movie villain performance of all time.
That's good.
Understand 100%. Everyone usually goes with Heath Ledger. I really can't argue it, but I grew up with Hans Gruber, and I've always thought that he's my favorite movie villain of all time. And I think now with Rickman gone, it just means even more to me that we won't get any more performances like this. So yeah, those are just 2 fives. I just want to tag along. As each week goes along, I'll be watching a John McTiernan film along with the podcast and having a good time. The next one I'm fucking excited for, we did it for the podcast. It's The Hunt for Red October.
That was really fun.
That's his fourth film. And then the one after that, I'm not excited to rewatch. It's called Medicine Man. Not good. Not good.
I'm just sitting here thinking about Alan Rickman and what a great actor he was, mm-hmm. and especially in villain roles, because obviously you have Hans Gruber, mm-hmm. and then many people my age will primarily know him as Professor Snape, of course. And then not on the same level as those two, but like the Sheriff of Nottingham was one that when we did Robin Hood, I was middle of the road on that movie. It got a 3 for me, but the Sheriff of Nottingham is just so clearly a class above everybody else, like just in a different movie than everybody else. Mm-hmm.
He plays a villain in this other movie. I can't remember the exact year. It's called Quigley Down Under, mm-hmm. with Tom Selleck. And he's exceptional in it yet again. He's just one of those actors I've always fucking loved. And then what makes me love him even more is he was in the film Dogma that we did.
Yes. And so good in that too.
Yes. But he became friends with Kevin Smith. Hmm. And Kevin Smith rails about what a great man Rickman was. And on the Blank Check podcast, they had Kevin Smith as their guest to talk about Die Hard.
Oh, that's awesome.
So listening to him talk, and the great thing, like Kevin Smith bought a movie theater in his old hometown. Hmm. And that's the movie theater he saw Die Hard in.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah. And yeah, him telling his stories about Rickman and what a great guy he is, it, like, I can feel it. Almost makes me cry. Mm-hmm. When Rickman passed away, Kevin Smith did a podcast in memory of him. And it makes me fucking bawl. I absolutely bawl. I love hearing when actors or athletes that I love and admire are good people. It just makes me love them even more. Yeah. And Rickman's one of those.
And you know what? To put praise on one other person in this conversation, Kevin Smith is a great storyteller. Oh. And I don't necessarily mean that from a film perspective, although there are films that he has made where he's a good storyteller in that regard. I mean a great verbal storyteller, where he can just go and go and go and give you all the relevant details and breathe life into a story. It's fantastic.
Yeah. If anybody's interested in hearing Kevin Smith, just look up An Evening with Kevin Smith. There are numerous DVDs and specials, and I've been to 3 of those events. None of them were filmed, so
they're gone forever.
He doesn't reuse material. It's fucking amazing. All right, so I just wanted to shout out the 2 McTiernan films I watched. Don't need to go into them. The next movie I watched with my daughter. I watched Freaky Friday. An overworked mother and her daughter did not get along. When they switch bodies, each is forced to adapt to the other's life for one Freaky Friday. My daughter just makes me the happiest man in the world. She has taken up hunting with her other dad, Chad. Shout out to Chad, who I know is not listening. Love that man. And that's their thing. And my daughter's like, I want you and I to have a thing. And I'm like, oh, that's really sweet. But I would say for like the last probably good 2 months now, I have her every weekend. And I always want her to watch a movie with me. And she's gotten more and more into it the last year or so. And so now every Saturday when I have her, we make dinner, and then we watch a movie, and then we go to bed. And so she says, like, this is our thing. And it just made me so happy.
That's nice.
So, but with that, we completed the entire Ghostbusters filmography. All four. We watched the
woman. Even the original. She spooks easy.
She did. And I told her, I'm like, there's a couple scary things. So I told her, I gave her warnings. I'm like, this might scare you. And she just clutches on to me. And it's super cute. It's a lot of fun. So I've been trying to find movies that are appropriate for her age. I want her to grow up because I'm desperate for two movies, Jaws and Jurassic Park. And so I have to find movies that I think she'll like. I just thought of one right now. I'm going to have to remember. I want to show her School of Rock.
Oh, come on.
Because I'm sure she'll like it. But the one we did choose was Freaky Friday. And what I'll say about this movie is it made me sad on two fronts. Full disclosure, cried at the end of this movie.
Did you?
Yep, cried. Mm-hmm. The other part made me sad is, why, Lindsay? Why did you wreck your life?
Yep.
You are fucking incredible in this movie. Incredible. And it makes me so sad to see that she threw away this talent. Devastating. But the movie was pretty funny. Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan are really good in this. But the one thing I noticed, Maya had a great time with it. The one thing I did notice is that it made me mad is how much. So when they switch bodies, it's Lindsay Lohan in Jamie Curtis's body. Mm-hmm. What disregard Lindsay Lohan had for her mother's life. Not her life in regards to, like, she put her to death, but, like, her career.
Oh, yeah.
And everything. I was just like, you selfish little bitch. Yeah. Like, you are fucking this person over in such massive ways. But I had a really, really good time. I thought I had seen this, and I was wrong. I hadn't.
Oh, really?
I'd only seen clips.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, I've seen so many clips, that's why it felt like I'd seen this movie. But there's good stretches where I was like, I don't fucking remember this at all. So wow. I counted it as a first time watch. Maya had a really great time with this.
I'm sure that only elevated your own experience.
It did. It's watching her enjoy movies just brings me more joy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I 100% cried. Probably because I'm there with my daughter. It's a mother daughter movie. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene at the end where they praise one another, where people don't know that they switch bodies, so they're speaking in code. Mm-hmm. And it's all about lifting the other up, and I just was bawling. So I had a really great time with me. Easy fucking four.
Like, yeah,
easy four.
I'm so happy you had such a good time with this. So my experience with this movie, I grew up with this movie. I've seen this many, many times.
Yeah,
I've seen this probably I don't know, probably between 8 and 10 times in my life, but probably not for maybe about 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a minute. I happen to know that my girlfriend really likes this movie.
Nice.
And maybe this is an excuse for us to go back and revisit this, because I remember loving this movie growing up.
Yep.
Full disclosure, had a big old crush on Lindsay Lohan growing up.
Like,
how could you not?
She's a smoke show.
She is a babe.
Yeah.
For sure.
100%. 100%.
Yep. Definitely liked Lindsay growing up. Jamie Lee Curtis, growing up, she was the mom from Freaky Friday, which is, like, really funny, I think, now that I've gotten a little bit more into film, and I know, like, she had this huge illustrious career before this, like, massive superstar before this, and I just knew her as the mom from Freaky Friday for most of my childhood.
That's fucking funny.
That was who she was. Yeah, I remember a few things from this movie. The main thing I remember, honestly, is probably not one that would be my favorite scene now, but I always remember Lindsay Lohan performing. Trying to perform a guitar solo at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's Jamie Lee Curtis inside her body.
Yes.
I guess trying to get this performed. I'll always remember that. And that song, that song is written for the movie, is so quintessential, like, 2003 bubblegum punk. It's so quintessential. I love it. I have such huge nostalgia for that song in particular, even though it's really not that good.
My daughter loved that song.
Oh, that's great.
She's like, the best thing is when, remember when they're in the garage practicing before they switch? Yeah. So Lindsay Lohan's like cutting it, right? And you can tell she's not playing.
No.
But my daughter's like, she's really good. Yeah. And I was like, I love you so much. And then when the song came out, she's like, oh, she's like, this song's so good. I love it. And I'm like, I'm so happy for you right now.
That makes me really happy to hear that she loved the song in particular, because I grew up, like, I thought it was so cool. As we established, this came out the same year as School of Rock. So I was very much like a young budding rock fan. And seeing this like punk rock band with like this girl guitarist and this girl bassist, I thought was so fucking cool. I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. So yeah, I'm really happy you liked this, because this is one I grew up with for sure.
So Maya does give half points.
Yeah.
She doesn't. I tell her it's out of 10. She gave it 4.5.
4.5.
Yeah. My next two movies are they're connected, because they are in a series. So The Manny Movie Club, it was my turn to pick. And I had told you about this movie I watched a while ago called The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil. Absolutely fucking amazing film.
Is the pick this week, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I think I'm going to have time to get to it.
Oh my God.
I think I will.
Fuck yes. Fuck yes. So I might be mispronouncing his name, but I'm pretty sure it's Ma Dong Seok. He is one of the leads, or he's probably the lead in The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil. And he played Gilgamesh in The Eternals. I've talked about how I have just kind of really fallen in love with him as an actor in these Korean films. So I looked up his filmography, and a shit ton of them are on Tubi. And I was like, perfect. So I started with this movie called The Roundup. And I was like, great. Opens well. I watched the first 10 minutes. And then there's this scene where he's just... I'll get into it. He's just sitting down to have a dinner, and all of a sudden this character shows up, and it's very apparent that they have a history. And it's they say something along the lines like, "I haven't seen you," and I was like, "Is this a series?" So I pause it, and then I check on Wikipedia. Yeah, The Roundup is the second film in a film series. So I was like, "Well, I can't watch the second film," so I go back and watch the first one, and it's called The Outlaws. Based on real events, this crime action film depicts a sole detective's attempts to keep peace while two Chinese-Korean gangs battle over turf in the neighborhood. I didn't really dive into the based on true events, but what I did learn is that there are some these Chinese-Korean immigrants come in and they kind of take over a gang, and it caused a whole bunch of crime and gang warfare on the streets of Seoul. And the movie isn't telling the story of how they stopped it. They're using that as the basis of the story that they're telling. So it's not a true story. They're basing these Chinese Korean immigrants coming in and taking over a Korean gang and causing a turf war for this film. That's basically my understanding. This movie... I did not know that guns are illegal in Korea. Mm. So all the violence in this film is hand-to-hand or knives. So there's no gun shootouts. It's all hand-to-hand.
That's kind of cool.
It is. The other thing I like is the fight scenes in here are not John Wick. It is not balletic kung fu. It is people fighting. Ma Dong Seok, he is a larger man for a Korean. You've seen him, right?
Yep.
Okay. What I love about him as an action star and what they've established in now the three movies I've watched of his is that when he hits you, it fucking hurts and it causes damage. So he's a complete fucking badass, but he's not one of those indestructible badasses. He's not like the early 80s action films like Stallone and Schwarzenegger. But he also... can take punishment, but doesn't just shrug it off. He can kind of like somewhat kind of shrug it off. I think the reason that I'm really enjoying these Korean action films is they remind me of the 80s action films I grew up on. Not that they're cheesy, but the police in Korea basically have carte blanche to do what they want. Mm-hmm. So he does in these films beat confessions out of his criminals. Now, you do see that these people are very bad criminals, so you don't really feel bad that he is beating information out of them. But at the same time, you're like, ooh. But I love it because it's reminding me of my youth. The one thing that they have done in the two films that I've seen, so The Outlaws and The Roundup, which I'll get into next, is that the villains in this are so fucking terrifying, you cannot wait for them to get their comeuppance because they are vicious. It is this guy, I think his name, let's see if I, no, I'm not going to be able to get it here. Yoon Kye-sang plays the villain, and he's fucking evil. He chops people's limbs off, and he is a complete fucking badass and very evil. I had a great fucking time with The Outlaws. The Outlaws and The Roundup, the following three films are called The Roundup, and then The Roundups hyphen something, and then The Roundup something something. These remind me of Lethal Weapon in regards that Man Young-suk, when he's with his cop colleagues, they have a lot of fun. In fact, almost like cheesy fun, especially him and his captain. They have a really great banter, and it's very amusing. But when they get to the action or telling the story, it's taken full-on serious. And I'm having such a great fucking time with these. These are the reason I don't want to watch something sad, because I'm having too much fun. So The Outlaws, easy fucking four. Like, slam dunk four. My only problem with The Outlaws and The Roundup, I think these are vibe films. So, like, you either buy into them and you enjoy them, or you're just not going to enjoy them. So while I'm giving The Outlaws and The Roundup, which I'll get into a second, they're both fours, I'm not recommending them for people. If people want to give them a try, I would love it for you. I'm very happy if they want to give these Korean action films a try. I don't feel confident enough in that my enjoyment is something that's going to be universal.
That's fair. And I would draw a comparison. I think you like this film better than these ones, but it's like RRR. When you were like,
yes.
You're like, style, like, this is a perfect version of what it is, but stylistically, if it's not for you, it might just not be for you.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, the great thing with RRR is if you can't buy into that opening arrest scene, just turn it off.
Yeah,
because
there's more of that.
If you can't handle that, you're not going to handle the other scenes, which are fucking awesome. But if you do, if you're like, oh, this is my cup of tea, then you're in for a wild ride. Unfortunately, The Outlaws, what I love about The Outlaws, this isn't a spoiler, and it's one of the things that made me giggle so hard. Again, remember, I watched the first 10 minutes of The Roundup, and they have an introductory scene of Ma Dong-seok. And it says you follow him. The point of view is the camera's right behind him, so you just see his broad shoulders in the back of his head as he's walking through a crowd, and the crowd's parting for him. Mm-hmm. And he goes and prevents there's this crazy guy in a convenience store. And so he walks through this crowd, the crowd parts, he kicks the guy's ass, and that's kind of how the movie starts. So when I went to watch The Outlaws starts the same way. You watch him walk through a crowd, he comes up, kicks some villain's ass, and then continues on his way. I was like, fuck. I'm like, so if the next two roundups start with the same, like the exact same shot, the exact same premise, gold for me. I am on fucking board. So yeah, Outlaws is a four. The Roundup, which I just watched last night, same thing. Followed by, the actor's name is Ma Dong-seok. His character name is Ma Seok Do.
Very similar.
Yeah, so I'm trying to learn them as best I can. So followed by Ma Seok Do, who heads to a foreign country to extradite a suspect. However, he discovers additional murder cases and learns about a killer who had committed crimes against tourists for many years. What I was talking with a coworker today. I just was kind of talking about these movies, and he mentioned that Koreans are very nationalistic. They're very proud of their people. They're not big fan of foreigners and stuff like that. Once I learned that, that made this movie make even more sense. The movie starts with Ma Seok Do going to Vietnam to extradite a criminal who's turned himself in. The reason he's turned himself in is that he was part of this crew of this guy who is kidnapping tourists, holding them for ransom, getting the money, and then killing them. He's doing this for years, and he was targeting Koreans. And so when they go to Vietnam, Masjak Do learns of this and then he's really upset that it's happening to Koreans. And I was like, when I was watching, I was like, wow, like he really cares about his people. And it made me realize that if this same movie was in the States and, say, an American officer went to Canada and there's a Canadian serial killer targeting the American, he wouldn't care. He wouldn't make a point that it's Americans that are getting killed. Yeah. It's that people are getting killed.
For sure.
And that was the difference here, is that he made it, the filmmaker, and they made it know that he's mad that it's Koreans being killed. And so now knowing about that, it makes this movie more sense. The villain in this, absolute fucking psychopath. He's played by Son Suk-Koo. Just fucking evil and conniving and just vicious. The action is really great. It starts to heighten a little bit. Again, we're not like John Wick levels, but there's not like a long unbroken shot, but there is a pretty decent action scene inside this apartment where the main villain and his, I don't want to call him a henchman because they are kind of working together, but it's like his partner. They take on like these 8 mercenaries, and it's pretty fucking badass. I want to say like the final battle between Masjak Do and the bad guy is fucking awesome. Complete badassery for my boy. I'm having a fucking blast with these movies. I cannot wait to watch the next two. And it makes me sad because I really do need to get some Oscar stuff done and a couple films for the snubbies as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably going to have to put these on hold for about a week. And I won't lie, it makes me fucking sad. I'm having a fucking blast
with these movies. Oh, that's great. I'm happy you're having so much fun. I do just want to interject. So we had, The Outlaws was the first one.
And then the Roundup.
Second one. The Roundup, No Way Out.
No Way Out.
Is the third one. And they recently just screened The Roundup Punishment at the Berlin International Film Festival.
Perfect. Oh, it's brand new? It's
brand new.
Fuck, I'm not going to be able to see it. Yeah. God damn
it. It was literally screened 6 days ago.
God, that makes me sad.
Yep.
So
you have one more of these, and then you're going to have to wait for the next one.
Whatever. I've got a whole bunch of his other films on my watch list.
I'm happy you found like a new boy.
100%.
A new one of your boys.
100% my boy. What made me fucking happy is when I looked into his filmography, they're remaking The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil in North America, and he's reprising his role as the gangster.
That's fucking cool.
I'm fucking stoked.
I wonder who has it. I wonder who's behind it.
I should look into it. Side note, spoiler alert for those in the MMs, the Manny Movie Club, The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil is this week's pick. I have one of the questions we do at the wrap up is recasting. I've done 4 different recasts.
Holy shit.
Yeah, dude. I decided to go. I went like, I won't spoil it, but I went balls deep in the recasting of The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil.
Okay, on May 5th, 2019, it was announced that Sylvester Stallone and his Balboa Productions partner, Braden Aftergood, will produce the U.S. remake of Gangster Cop and the Devil, with Madong Seok reprising his role and producing the film under BA Entertainment.
Fucking A.
So it was going to be produced by Stallone's company.
Okay. Stallone's, I'm hoping he won't be in it. He's too old to play the cop,
mm-hmm.
There's no other part in there that he could play, so he could try to interject himself as the cop, which would be really unfortunate.
I hope he doesn't.
I really hope that you do get a chance to watch it. I think that you will really like The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil. I think when you watch it, you will see, you'll be like, an American remake of this could be unfucking believable. Like, that film on its own is great, but with a budget and some really good actors, mind-blowingly good.
I was going to ask you who you would have direct, but I'm sure you get into that
I haven't.
Just from what you've told me, the name that comes to mind is Scorsese, but he might be getting up there.
No, I don't want Scorsese. I want better action than that. My dream would be Fincher. After watching the one action scene he did in The Killer, I would love to see him do something similar with The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil. When you watch The Gangster, and the Cop, and the Devil, Fincher is who you would... It immediately comes to mind.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Outlaws, Roundup, easy fours across the board. Now I'm sad I only have one more Roundup to watch until I have to wait until the next one hits. Maybe I'll see if I can buy a copy somewhere.
Hmm.
I don't know. Okay. The last movie I watched, chipping away at my Oscar rewatch, finally got the last of the Best Actor nominees out of the way as I watched Rustin. Activist Bayard Rustin faces racism and homophobia as he helps change the course of civil rights history by orchestrating the 1963 March on Washington. So this was the last performance, and this is the one that I'd heard kind of snuck in as a nominee, that he was definitely on the radar. But this is kind of like the, I don't know, I guess for lack of a better word, the fifth of the five nominees. And I was very excited to see what his performance could be, because I wanted to see kind of what knocked out DiCaprio. As much as I love DiCaprio, I'm really glad that Coleman Domingo's in here. He's unfucking believable. The movie is not. The movie is your standard biopic about a man. He is an openly gay man in the 1960s who also happens to be an African American. So his life was shit.
Not good.
Not good. And they display it in such a way. But Bayard Rustin wasn't afraid of who he was, and that's why this story is worth telling. Plus, he is responsible. The 1963 March on Washington is the I Have a Dream speech.
Hmm.
And it's, while they don't get into that, which I kind of liked, this movie literally is about Bayard Rustin organizing and setting up this peaceful protest despite everything going against him. And it's a pretty good story. A story like this, with what he has to overcome, you would think like at some point near the end or you know, the big uplifting moment, I'm going to be on the verge of tears. And there's nothing like that. But what you have is an absolutely mind-blowing performance from Coleman Domingo. I don't have any problem with him being nominated here. All five of the Best Actor nominees this year are spectacular. Like I said, the performance is great. The movie is it's just a standard biopic. They do nothing new.
Hmm.
You just get to watch an incredible performance. That's the only reason to watch it. Yeah. So it's a three.
I'm looking through Coleman Domingo's filmography to see if there's anything I really know him from.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'll take the opportunity to mention, I did not know this, one episode run in BoJack Horseman.
What?
But I will further emphasize that it is one of my favorite one episode performances. I didn't know it was him. Mm. It's this episode, if you're a fan of the show, it's the old Sugarman Place, which is like top three episodes of the show for me. He plays Eddie the Dragonfly, who is one of the main characters in that one. Anyway, Coleman Domingo, not somebody I'm very familiar with at all. I don't know if I'll have time to get around to this. Where did you watch it?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix?
It's a Netflix film.
It's probably like, I mean, we're what, a week away from the Oscars? A little over? I probably have like four movies before this that I gotta get to, so I don't think I'll really get to it.
Honestly, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I want to see. I'm going to try to get to American Fiction this weekend.
That should be way higher priority than this.
Do you know if Zone of Interest is on anything? Because that's the only other Best Picture nom I need now.
You don't need to watch it.
But I do.
You don't need to watch it.
Okay. Well, I'll try to get to American Fiction at the very least. And then, yeah, I don't know where I'm at for acting. I think I'm still missing probably at least two acting nominees. So,
In the Best Actor?
Maybe.
No.
Well, I'm still missing Jeffrey Wright.
Okay. Cillian Murphy. Oh yeah.
Coleman Domingo.
All right, so you are missing two. Yeah, you've seen Bradley Cooper.
I've seen Bradley Cooper.
And you've seen Paul Giamatti.
There you go. Yeah, so I'm missing two.
All right.
But yeah, so I probably won't be getting to this one if I was to guess, but and honestly, your pitch did not make me want to go to it more.
You don't need to. Honestly, you don't.
But hey, good for you, Coleman Domingo.
Yeah, 100%. Worthy of the nomination, but the movie's not worth watching. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not. I'm sorry. Yeah, watch it if you want to be a completionist. I think Sam has other priorities, especially The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil.
Yeah, that and...
just saying.
I'm also going to try to get to the other two snubbies that I haven't gotten to. In particular, I think they are Blackberry and... I can't remember the other
one. Oh, I have a free rental. I can finally watch Blackberry. Because it just will not stop playing in French and Crave. Give us the English version, you fucks.
Fuck, what is the other one? Blackberry and one other one. Anyway, doesn't matter.
May, December?
Nope, seen it.
Oh, all right. All right, so... That wraps up this week's edition of Real Talk. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, allows more people to find us, which we greatly appreciate. You can also give us a rating on Spotify. And while you're on Spotify, why don't you ask our weekly question? If you answer the weekly question, I promise to read it on air. You can email us at sammanningmoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at sam_manny_movie. You can follow us on Facebook, which I'm really slacking on. And you can follow us on Letterboxd at manny42 and Sam Reimer, respectively. For the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast, I'm Manny Manuel.
The other movie I wanted to watch was The Killer. I'm Sam Reimer.
Adios!